Dhamma Vishnupad, Paramahansa Superbita Acharya, Asatara Siddhu Sri Sriman, His Divine Grace, Shalesi, Bhakti Vedanta Swamiraj, Srila Prabhupada Kidai, Gaur Premanande, all glorious to the Ashanda devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Granga, and all Vishnu Vidai, Vishnu Prasthai Vidai, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamite Namane, Namaste Sarasatundeve, Gaur Vani Vicharne, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Sukarna. Om Agyanativanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Shaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sadvivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Virjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Vitam Sha Hey Krishna, Karna Sindo, Dinabando, Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namostute, Tapta, Kanchana, Gorangi, Radhe, Vrindavaneshri, Vrishubhana, Sutta, Devi, Pranamami, Hari, Priye, Vanchakalpa, Turubhyascha, Kripa, Sindhuvyevacha, Patitanam, Bhavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Namo Namaha, Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prunitananda, Shadvaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 Canto 8 Chapter 23, text number 9, we'll begin with Demigods Regain the Heavenly Planets. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Vat. I'll just read the verse. Vatsa Parada Bhadram Te Priyahi Sutalayalam Sutalalayam Modamana Swapotrena Yatinam Sukam Avaha. The Supreme Personality of God had said, My dear son, Prahlad, all good fortune unto you for the time being. Please go to the place known as Sutala and there enjoy happiness with your grandson and your other relatives and friends. Text 10. Nityam adrashta asi mam tatra gadapanim Avastitam Madarshana Maha Alara Twasta Karmani Bandanaha Nityam Drashtasi Mam Tatra Gadapanim Avastinam Madarshana Mahalara Dvasta Karma Nibandanaha Nityam Drashtasi Mam Tatra Kadapanim Avastitam Madarshana Mahalara Dvasta Karma Nibandanaha Nityam, constantly. Drashta, the seer. Asi, you shall be. Mam, unto me. Tatra, there in Sutala Loka. Kada panim, with a club in my hand. Avashtidam, situated there. Madarshanaha, by seeing me in that form,
Maha-alada. By the great transcendental bliss. Dvashta. Having been vanquished. Karma nibandhanaha. The bondage of fruitive activities. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead assured Prahlad Maharaj, "You shall be able to see me there in my usual feature, with conch shell, disc, club, and lotus in my hand. Because to be a transcendental bliss, due to always personally seeing me, you will have no further bondage to fruitive activities." Purport, Karma Bandha, the bondage of fruitive activities, entails the repetition of birth and death. One performs fruit activities in such a way that he creates another body for his next life. As long as one is attached to fruit of activities, he must accept another material body. This repeated acceptance of material bodies is called Sangsara Bandhana. To stop this, the devotee is advised to see the Supreme Lord constantly. The Kanishta Adhikari, or neophyte devotee, is therefore advised to visit the temple every day and see the form of the Lord regularly. Thus the neophyte devotee can be freed from the bondage of fruitive activities. Nityam drashtasimam tatra gadapanima vastitam madarshna mahalara dvasta karma nivandanaha. Supreme Personality of God had assured Prahlad Maharaj, "You shall be able to see me there in my usual feature, with conch shell, disc, club, and lotus in my hand. Because if you are transcendental bliss, due to always personally seeing me, you will have no further bondage to fruitive activities." Maung Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Vudai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanavane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Vacharne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Sitarne. So those who are already asleep, they should try and wake up. Right, Vol? Before we go to sleep. We want peace, but we don't want too much peace. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Jagnatat karmanonyatra loko yam karma bandhanai Tadartam apikunteya mukta sangha samachara. That work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, it has to be performed, otherwise one work binds one to this material world. So perform prescribed duties for his satisfaction, O son of Kunti, and in this way you'll always remain unattached and free from bondage. So work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu or Krishna is known as jaga. In this material world, there are different types of activities. One type of activity is called karma. Karma means that one works according to the injunctions of a shastra, but one's aim is to acquire some better facility for sense gratification, better opportunities for material enjoyment. Such activities are pious, but they have nothing to do with the soul. They simply bring one to a better position in the material world. The general activities in this age is to act whimsically, capriciously, according to one's impulses arising from the modes of nature or the senses, and this is known as vikarma, whimsical activities aimed at sense enjoyment. Such activities are known as impious activities, and they will certainly bring one to a lower position in the material world where one's sense gratification will be restricted, and one will have to suffer different reactions. But whether it's karma or vikarma, both of them will bring one into the material world again, where one has to suffer old age, disease, and death. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jara marana mokshaya mama shritya tantiye te brahma tadvidu kritsnam adhyatma karma chakilam. That those who are actually intelligent, who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death, they take refuge in me in devotional service, they're actually Brahman because they know everything about spiritual activities. Somehow or another, we have to recognize that we have a problem. the problem is not that just that we're going to die, that's enough of a problem. But the fact is that we have to take birth again, and although we may think, well, I've actually done quite a bit in devotional service, I've done a lot of pious activities, why should I worry about taking birth again? I'll get a better birth in my next lifetime, and I'll have more enjoyment than I have now. Who knows? Perhaps I'll take birth as on the heavenly planets, maybe even as Indra. But according to the Vedic literature, even Indra suffers. What to speak of Indra? All the demigods are suffering, and in a better position than Indra is Brahma. But according to the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Arvartana Arjuna Mamupetya Tukonteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. That from the highest planet, even up to Brahma Loka, even Lord Brahma is suffering. Even he is not peaceful. He has so many dependents and they're all causing him so many problems. The whole universe is a mess, actually. We think that maybe this little city or this neighborhood, whatever. When people drive by here, they probably think, oh, what a nice little neighborhood. Everything's very peaceful. And then when you hear the history of the neighborhood, so many people were murdered here, so many, so many unusual, not unusual, but violent things go on in this nice, peaceful little neighborhood. Just like people go into the country and they think, oh, what a nice, peaceful country. But if they look on the ground a little bit more carefully, there's the red ants fighting against the black ants. There's the weeds trying to strangle the trees. The butterfly is flying into a nice flower and it's closing and eating him. So it's actually a very violent world. From the most basic, elementary part of the world, or in other words, the microcosm, to the macrocosm, the entire universe is simply a big mess. So many problems, everyone's struggling. Krishna says, karshati, for existence. With these six senses, including the mind, everyone is struggling. But because we're in ignorance, we're thinking, well, this is not such a bad place. Maybe I can make a success here. I can be successful here. People will praise me. The modes of nature are strangling me, and I'm going around asking people to tell me what a nice person I am. I'm gradually sinking into the bottom of the ocean of material existence, into the depth of the lagoon of material sense gratification, and I simply want to be satisfied by people saying, you're a nice person. You did a good job. You're sinking quicker than anyone else. You're the acharya. But here it mentions that one should realize that the real purpose of human life is somehow or another to get out of this entanglement of material nature, which is described here as karma bandhana. Karma bandhana means those activities which cause one to take another body. And here it mentions the word drashta, our vision of things. As we've heard, that generally the vision of the conditioned soul is that everything here is for my enjoyment. And if it's not going to make me happy, then we have to get rid of it. This is the obvious philosophy in modern society, that either you exploit it or you destroy it. You cut the trees down to exploit them, and if something gets in your way of cutting down the trees, if there's some insect or something like that on your crops, you destroy it. You just wipe it out. Just like in many countries around the world, they have a competition between insecticides or pesticides and the insects or the pests. So the farmer, he grows some crops, some insects come to eat it, and the farmer tries to kill them with pesticides or insecticides. So the result is he kills quite a number of insects, and only few survive, but those few that survive are the ones that are most powerful, the most that are not affected by the insecticide. So the next year, these insects, they multiply, stronger insects, and the plants, ordinarily only the most healthy plants survive, but this time the unhealthy plants also survive and they reproduce. So the plants get weaker, the insects get stronger, and therefore they have to invent more powerful insecticides to kill off the more powerful insects and protect the weaker plants. So next year again they kill off so many insects with this more powerful insecticide. Only the strongest survive. So gradually you get super insects. The type that even the most powerful insecticide, they eat it and they become healthier. And the plants get weaker. You just breathe on them and they crumble. They just fall into bits. So in this way, what happens is that people become, instead of eating healthy plants, they wind up eating very unhealthy plants with practically no energy in them, but have very powerful poisons spread all over them, inside, outside, in between. So this is the result of this philosophy that anything that gets in your way, you just kill it. Ultimately, the person who has that philosophy, who gets the results of such a philosophy, he himself is destroyed. Therefore, one should understand that the actual philosophy is not simply to exploit the material world and if you can't do it, then you destroy it. That the real vision is something different. The real vision has to be cultivated that everything here is the property of Krishna and that everyone has a right to live. In the Veda culture, at least, the householders, their philosophy that they were trained up with, that even if there's a spider in your house, you should feed him. You should make sure that not even the spider in your house survives. Nowadays, if someone has a spider in the house, they become very disturbed. They get out their raid can and they make sure they spray him for 5 minutes and get someone else to throw him outside because they don't even want to touch him. But that's not the philosophy of the Veda culture. The Veda culture is that even if there's a spider, you're supposed to feed him. Even the sages, when they lived in the forest, they would put out some milk for the tigers, and this way the tigers or the lions that would become friends of theirs. So, and they used to grow a certain amount of crops, and they knew that a certain amount of the animals would come and eat it. So they grew out extra crops. And they, of course, they knew how to plant crops in such a way that all their fields weren't destroyed. But generally speaking, because they didn't interfere with the balance of nature, the animals would just come and they'd take sufficient for their maintenance and then they'd go away. And there was no problem. Just like in Australia, they had this idea that there was a certain insect, I forget what the insect was, and they wanted to get rid of it, so they decided, do you know what that insect was? They got these frogs. Maybe it was locusts or something. So they decided to get rid of the locusts by getting frogs. Unfortunately, there was no natural enemy of these frogs. Even these frogs have a certain sticky skin or something, poisonous skin, so even the snakes, when they eat it, they throw them up. They can't eat the frog. So the frogs, it turns out, they didn't really like the locusts. They wouldn't even eat them. They couldn't even get them. So they had all these frogs multiplying all over Australia. And if you go there, you see them, no one can touch them. If you touch it, you get all full of this sticky stuff. Is that right? What's that? Yeah. And the frogs, no animal can eat them, so now they've overwhelmed Australia. So to solve one problem, to get rid of one, what they thought is problem, which is undoubtedly the result of interfering with the natural laws of nature, just like they killed off the wolves and then some other animal comes along and takes over.
Rabbits.
Then they try and kill off the rabbits and some other animal comes along. Something else comes along. So ultimately they just wind up destroying the balance and causing their own problems. So the vision that everything here is Krishna's property is actually practical. It is not that anyone will starve. And even the greedy people, what is the benefit of being greedy? What is the great benefit of these, what have these persons accomplished, for instance, who have huge houses? They can't even clean them. I was reading in the 12th canto, Ridayana Maharaj's purports, about the descriptions of Kali Yuga, and how in Kali Yuga, if you simply have wealth, then you're known as a gentleman, an aristocrat, you're known as a gentle person, just by wealth. So these persons, they may live in very opulent neighborhoods, but inside, they're performing all kinds of perverted, abnormal activities. Their minds are completely bewildered, distorted. So what is the value? Externally, everyone is thinking they're successful, but they're suffering more than the normal person. The basic necessity that everyone has, if they're the necessities of life, to get something to eat, to have some shelter. Beyond that, everything else is not that important. Some food and some shelter, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Some protection, some shelter, some food, some place to take rest, some family life like that. So these are basic necessities, but other things are not very important. And if one has the vision of God consciousness that everything is Krishna's property, this will not threaten one's ability to get the basic necessities of life. Nor is it a fact that the greediest people or the greediest societies are the most happy and peaceful societies. Maharaj Shavdev says, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma, yet indriya pritya aprinoti. He says, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma, that those who are absorbed in this idea that I can enjoy the material world by satisfying my senses, they're pramata, they're crazy. Insane. No one has ever been able to enjoy the material world simply by indriya pritya, by becoming overly attached to sense gratification. Nasadu manye yata atmanoyam. That any person who's a sadhu, who has a little common sense, a little brains, he doesn't take part in such activities. Nasadu manye yata atmanoyam. Asannapi kleshada ashadeha. Because such activities cause misery, cause so much anxiety and problems. And the result is, afterwards, one dies and takes another body and suffers again. The reactions for his previous activities. Paravastavadabodha jato yavana jignasita atmatatvam. Therefore, in the struggle for existence, if one is simply absorbed in sense gratification, he's said to be defeated by the mode of ignorance. He's been befooled, doomed to ignorance and bondage, Krishna says. And why? Because his consciousness becomes covered by his material desires. The material desires, when he accepts them, when he becomes attached to them, it covers his consciousness just like the clouds cover one's vision of reality of the sun. And when the consciousness is unclear, then the mind becomes unclear. When the mind's unclear, one has to take another material. Or when the mind's unclear, the consciousness is unclear. And when the consciousness is unclear, then one takes another material body again. Human life is especially meant to clearing the consciousness, not to covering it more and more by increasing one's material desires. To do this, one is advised to keep in the protection of the sun. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar Yahun Krishna Tahun Nahi Mayar Andhakar. That Krishna is compared to the sun, Maya is compared to the darkness. If we keep in contact with Krishna, then there is no question of darkness. And how to keep in contact with Krishna? To recognize that our real interest is to please Him. And then to do those activities which are pleasing to Him, in this way we can actually remember Him. So the first two qualifications in order to constantly remember Krishna is to agree to please Him under the guidance of His representatives, and this way engaging those activities that were meant to please Him, then we can naturally remember Him. And by remembering Him, then we're protected from this idea that we are the lords and the enjoyers in the material world. And gradually, this bondage, which is caused by these two ideas, gradually dissipates, and our real position and situation is granted to us again. Therefore it says, Yatpada pankaja palasa vilasya bhaktya kama shayam grahitam ukratayanti shanta yavan narikta matayo yatayo piruda shuto ganas tamarunam bhajavasudevam. That is advised to worship Krishna. Because by worshipping Krishna, one can cut the bondage within his heart to fruit of activities, this mentality. Krishna is so nice that if one becomes his devotee, if one serves him and he reveals himself, then actually one sees that the real source of pleasure is not pleasing my body and mind, the real source of pleasure is pleasing Krishna. We ourselves are servants, we're constitutionally infinitesimal servants, we've simply accepted service to illusion. And the result is we're suffering. But if we accept our service to Krishna, the result is that we'll become happy. And even the great yogis and jnanis who try to stop their waves of sense gratification and go on with their process, they can't do so. They become overwhelmed by material desires and fall away from the process. Therefore, it's much easier to take to Krishna's service, to hear about Krishna, to try to understand what will be pleasing to Him, and by engaging in such activities, get His association, and in that association, become free from karma bandha, which cause karma sangsara bondage. Although, at the beginning, we may not fully understand the philosophy, but Krishna is so kind that He manifests Himself as the deity in the temple. So although yogis may be trying for thousands of years to see the deity within the heart, but the neophyte devotee is so fortunate that he can simply walk into the temple and see the same deity. You don't have to wait for 10,000 years like Harada Muni before you see Lord Jagannath. You can walk in the temple and He's there smiling at you. And when you leave the temple, you can take a picture of Him. Just put it in your pocket. Whenever you want to see Him in your heart, just take Him out of your pocket. So in this way, Krishna has made Himself easily available, and by further cultivation, one will be able to see Krishna always and everywhere. Prabhupada said, by developing a practical service attitude towards Krishna, then one will, by a revelation coming from Krishna, one will be able to see Him everywhere and always. But at least in the beginning, as our acharyas have given us, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Acharyas have given us a system of deity worship so that we can fix our consciousness upon Krishna. Prabhupada once said, seeing the deity, then eventually we'll remember the deity. And if we remember the deity, then our lives become perfect. Even if one doesn't understand the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, if somehow or another one can come into a contact with a deity and worship Him, then the result is he will understand what the philosophy is, because that is the philosophy. Prabhupada gives the example, or in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is example of one Brahmin in South India who was told by his spiritual master to read all 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita every day. So in front of the Sri Ranga temple, he was reading the Bhagavad Gita, but he was not very learned, and therefore he was mispronouncing the words. And as it is in the material world, as it usually is, people would be laughing at him. But Lord Chaitanya was visiting there. He saw the Brahmin reading, mispronouncing the words. And he said, "My dear Brahmin," he said, "why are you trying to read Bhagavad Gita? You seem like you're not very learned." He said, "Well, my spiritual master, he has told me to read the 18th chapters every day. So I'm doing the best I can." So Lord Chaitanya, because the man, he realized that Lord Chaitanya was not laughing at him, he was serious. So Lord Chaitanya said, "But why do you appear to be crying if you can't even understand?" He said, "Well, because my spiritual master told me to read the 18 chapters every day, I'm trying to do it. But as soon as I open the book, immediately I see Lord Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot. And I think how kind the Lord is, that although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's acting as a charioteer for his infinitesimal servant. So when I think about this, how kind the Lord is, that he'll act as an insignificant charioteer for his devotee, then immediately I begin to cry." So Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said that you're the person who's actually understood the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, one may go on studying for many thousands of years, but if one doesn't come to the conclusion of becoming a devotee of Krishna and a devotee of Krishna's devotees, then he hasn't understood anything. On the other hand, if one can come to that conclusion, then he's understood Bhagavad Gita and he's come to the perfection of his life. Therefore, the neophyte devotee, if he comes and sees Krishna and he tries to, and he appreciates Krishna, how nicely Krishna is dressed, how nicely Srimati Radharani is dressed, how kind Lord Jagannath looks. He always looks quite happy. So does Lord Baladev. Srimati Subhadra Devi seems well protected. So if we see that and we appreciate how, then naturally we'll think of the deity, and by thinking of the deity, then our lives become, we advance in devotional service. Nothing else is necessary. On the other hand, those who execute severe austerities, penances, study so many books, if they don't appreciate Krishna and his devotees, they haven't gotten anywhere. They haven't gotten out of karma. They haven't made any advancement to getting out of karma bandha, permanently at least. Because one may advance through the modes of nature by austerity and penance and study, but one cannot become free without becoming a devotee of Krishna and engaging in his service. And ultimately, freedom means maya asakta manak parata, becoming attached to seeing Krishna everywhere. One can see Krishna everywhere if one sees everything in relationship to Krishna. And one can see everything in relationship with Krishna if one has the practical desire to utilize everything in Krishna's service. So freedom comes from when one becomes enthusiastic to preach Krishna consciousness and utilize everything in Krishna's service, then naturally one will see everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. If one is thinking how to engage everything in Krishna's service, and by seeing everything in relation with Krishna, it is very easy to remember Krishna. And by remembering Krishna constantly in such a mood, one will become free from all entanglement in the material world. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Since it's the marathon, so we should get enthusiastic to utilizing what Krishna has given us in his service. Yes.
The
process doesn't increase material desires. If you follow the process, it doesn't. But just like sometimes when you're spring cleaning, when people spring clean, or that when they clean during the winter, they just sweep all the dust underneath the rug. But then when it's time for spring, they take the rug up, all the dust starts flying. So it wasn't by removing the rug that they've created dust. They just became more aware of the dust that was already there. So sometimes at the beginning of devotional service, when we make some attempt at renunciation, or at least we've experienced frustration in the material world, and therefore we're in the mood of renunciation, it appears that all our material desires have disappeared. But actually, it's not that all of them have disappeared, but at least some of them have disappeared, and therefore we feel some relief. But later on, after some familiarity and maybe some lack of caution, then we may not be so cautious, and we may execute devotional service with not that same mood of renunciation and surrender. And therefore, we may become aware of the dormant desires that are there again. But that's not due to devotional service. Generally, it's due to our laxity in devotional service, a lack of determination to execute it properly or with full determination. But the fact is, Krishna manifests them again just to increase as a test. If we want to increase our determination, then those desires will go away again. We increase our detachment and our determination to engage in service, then Krishna will take those desires away again. Anything else? Yes. Well, if you can just focus on Krishna, that's enough. But Krishna includes everything. Includes this energy called illusion. So we understand about illusion in relationship to Krishna, that's also Krishna. The neophyte devotee is advised especially to read the first 9 cantos, which deal with Krishna and deals with how Krishna's energies work in relationship to Krishna. So by understanding these energies, then we get to understand Krishna too. So we're not studying illusion, we're studying Krishna. And part of that study of Krishna is to understand how his energies work, one of which is called illusion. We don't become devotees of illusion by studying about her. Of course we do, but as we understand that she is also an expansion of Srimati Radharani, engaging us in illusory service to Krishna. So by understanding that, we become enthusiastic to engage in the real service to Krishna. Yes. Yeah, sure. You may take birth again, but you won't have a material body. If one becomes completely purified, he'll never get another material body, although he may take birth again. But he won't be in the material world. He'll be in the spiritual world. Once one becomes a Nitya Siddha, he won't fall down, although he may appear again. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, they may have appeared, but we don't consider they had a material body. They had a fully spiritualized body. Therefore, we don't mind taking birth again, but we always want to be Krishna conscious. Devotee prays, I don't care, as Bhaktivinoda Thakura prays, I don't want to take birth as a Brahma opposed to Krishna. I'd rather be an insect in the house of a devotee, because at least then I can get some prasadam. Anything else? Yes. Well, therefore, we should also chant Hare Krishna. Oh, we can understand. I mean, we understand it to some extent. As far as fully understanding it, we don't have to get. We have to understand it enough to take shelter of Krishna. That's all. We don't have to understand every aspect of Maya. When we have to stay in the material world for a long, long time. Just as in the 12th canto, there was, what was his name? Markandeya Rishi. He asked Krishna, he had a desire, can you explain to me what your illusory energy is? So Krishna laughed a little bit. You really want to know? All right. So then, shortly after that, then suddenly there was a devastation, the whole universe filled up with water, and everyone was destroyed except for Markandeya Rishi and a few monsters in the sea that was swimming around with him. So he was swimming and drowning and surfacing in the ocean of devastation for millions of years, and then suddenly he saw Krishna on a lotus flower sucking his toe, and he breathed in Markandeya Rishi into a nice peaceful environment inside. And then Krishna breathed out, and out came Markandeya Rishi in the water of devastation again. So after some millions of years of suffering like that, he learned what the illusory energy was. So if you really want to find out what the illusory energy is, Krishna may fulfill your desire too. But we just want to find out enough so we can take shelter of Krishna. That's sufficient. We don't have to find out everything. We'll accept Markandeya Rishi's word for it. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Om.